So even if genetic information is going to be carefully stored in the future, many people still have concerns about its use. Julian Svavolesco is the director of the Oxford Practical Centre for Ethics, and Amy Taylor is the genetic counsellor at Addenbrookes Hospital. Julian, we've heard the terms designer babies bandied around in the press with some concerns about the fact that we might be shaping society in the future. And you actually specifically look at the ethics around how we can look at genetics of embryos and then select which embryo we then want to implant into a mother's uterus and basically genetically select which baby will be born. I mean, is this possible and is it even legal?
Yes, using IVF and genetic diagnosis, you can test embryos at the moment legally for dispositions to major diseases. So chromosomal diseases like Down syndrome or single gene disorders like cystic fibrosis, thalassemia, Huntington's disease, and some early onset forms of Alzheimer's disease. But you can only test for the genes which are associated with what the Human Fertilisation Embryology Authority judges to be serious disease. You can't, for example, test for the sex of the baby and choose to have a male or female embryo, and nor can you test for genes that are associated with various abilities or personality traits.
Thank you, Julian. And I suppose previously the situation was that if a mother was at risk of having a child with Down syndrome, for example, she might have an amniotic fluid sample and cells taken, then have to face a very difficult decision as to whether to continue with that pregnancy or whether to abort, which is obviously, you know, a very tricky issue to face. Amy, I believe that you actually work with some of the parents who are facing these types of decisions. How do you talk about these issues with them?
Well, we see families who have a known genetic condition that's been inherited through their family, and we start by exploring with them how they feel about the possibility of having a child affected by that condition. Some couples will be accepting of that. That depends on the severity of the condition, their own experience of it in the family. Some will feel very strongly that they don't wish that condition to be passed on to the next generation. So if they take that position, then pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, or PGD, is an option for them. It's a simpler option, or it's an ethically more comfortable option for them than to go through pregnancy and have diagnosis and then have termination. But that's not to say that it's easy at all. Like all IVF, it's a lengthy process. The woman has to have her ovary stimulated to produce several eggs. It takes probably about a year from when we refer a couple to the PGD centre, which is in London, to when they might have actually an embryo implanted. So it's not something that couples undertake lightly. They do it if they feel strongly that usually their reasoning is that it would be unfair on a child to have that condition.
And I believe that there's a big community of people that are affected by deafness. And this is another condition which is listed within the guidelines of something that we can legally, within the UK, use this pre-implantation diagnosis, genetic screening treatment for. And that there's lots of people that say that actually deafness isn't a disability. It provides another form of language for people, and we shouldn't be able to select those genes out of the gene pool.
That's true. So as Julian mentioned, the Human Fertilisation and Embryology Authority, the HFEA, decide what conditions can be selected for using PGD. And one gene that causes deafness, Connexin 26, is on that list. The way that they make those decisions about what conditions are added to the list is dependent on how severe a condition is. They do use public consultation. So deafness is probably at the milder end of the conditions where PGD is allowable. And you're absolutely right, the deaf community feel very strongly that deafness is just a normal variation and that it shouldn't be something that you should select out of the population.
Julian, I believe that also as we're getting more information on the genetic basis of disorders like schizophrenia, for example, or autism or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, there's, you know, a possibility that people may want to select embryos out that have a predisposition, a genetic predisposition to disorders like that. Is there a worry that that might happen in the future? Are we playing God a little bit too much? Are we trying too much to shape society?
Well, you can sequence the whole genome of an embryo at the moment, but it's very expensive. Well, it's come down to about $1,000. So eventually you'll be able to look at all the genes that are associated with, say, psychiatric diseases such as schizophrenia or depression. And when you have 10 or 20 embryos and you've found the ones which don't have major genetic diseases, You'll then have a risk profile. So embryo one will have a higher chance of developing schizophrenia, and embryo two will maybe have a higher chance of depression. And it's my view that people should be free to make those decisions. The state doesn't have a role in constraining their liberty. They should have access to that information when it's available. And they should make decisions about what kind of child they think will have the best chance of the best life. I think the worry is that at the moment, you wouldn't be allowed to test for those risk factors, even though the information is available.
What about the fact that some of these genes might actually confer an evolutionary advantage? You've got 10 seconds to try and answer that.
Well, then, you know, you have to factor that into the decision. And I think if you give people freedom, some people will choose to select against that, some people won't. You're only talking about selecting from embryos that nature might have picked out. You're not talking about genetically engineering people.
Thank you. And I'm afraid that's all we've got time for. Thanks to Julian Swawileski and Amy Taylor.
And finally, here's Hannah with your question of the week.